shoots, scores! DK wins it for an end round! Biggest man in MLS comes up huge.
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. This is your host, Gavin, and it's been a while since we have been on this podcast. I'll explain everything, but it has been a while. But we are back to talk about deadline day. Oh my gosh, decision day. We beat Columbus 2-1 in a very, very big matchup, and a very emotional matchup with the way it turned out. And then we're going to talk about a little bit about the end of the season run-in as well, and a tiny, tiny little preview of Montreal right at the end. All the normal stuff you guys love to hear from us. But first, I have to introduce my co-host for the night, and it is, you already heard him, Chase. Chase, how you doing tonight?
Yo, I'm doing good. I haven't been on here in a while. I think even the last one that you guys did, I wasn't part of, if I'm not mistaken, so looking forward to it.
Well, okay, so the last one we did was actually post Philly, but really we focused on the Open Cup win. So if you haven't had a chance to talk about that, love to hear your thoughts. I know it's a long time ago, but let's rewind to the good old days when we won the cup at home.
Yeah, I can't remember if I was on that one, but it was, I will just reinstate everything that I said if I did, that it was like the best experience I've ever had supporting a team, because there's been a lot of hard times that were looking pretty dire and not exactly on the up and up, and to go through the final of a tournament while also, you know, trying to face what it means to like compete on two fronts and qualify for the playoffs and be able to get to the end. Now that I think about it, I'm pretty sure that I was on it, because I remember like some people like addressing whether or not it was a bit tainted, as we had maybe an easier run in, at least, you know, in when we went obviously playing a USL team in the final and stuff like that. But it still is something that I think, like, regardless of what was going to happen on decision day, like whether or not we would have made the playoffs, like obviously that would speak poorly of the future. But I think that as I've gotten a little bit older, the way I watch sports is a bit different, where I view it as something to enjoy and have entertainment. And that was something that I think I was not, you know, winning a trophy, there's nothing that could really damper the season completely. I almost feel like everything now is just cake, but it's even better now that we pushed through and we're into the final. But yeah, it's still something that I will freaking remember forever. And hopefully it's not the, hopefully that's now the standard, you know, getting to cup finals, winning trophies and stuff like that, not just sort of a blip.
Yeah, man, it was such a good experience. And for what's been a frustrating season, I think for a lot of people, myself included, in terms of the performances on the field and just some of the results as well, that kind of cup run was just a magical moment. And there's so many mini magical moments within it that are just going to be fondly remembered. So I think I do remember you on there, but it doesn't hurt to just remember such an amazing experience like that.
Yeah, always happy to relive it.
Exactly. So let's go ahead and move on. And the first thing I wanted to ask about before we get into the match itself against Columbus is your thoughts on the end of season run-in. So we have 5 games remaining, right? So we had, after the Philly match, of course, which is the last time we spoke, we had home against Atlanta, which turned out to be a 1-0 loss. Orlando City home against Toronto, smashed them 4-0. Very fun game. Lost in New Jersey against NYCFC 2-1 with a comeback victory for them. Got smashed on the road against Inter Miami 4-1. And then obviously with a comeback victory on decision day at home 2-1. So what were your what are your thoughts on how the season kind of ended for us?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is often a little bit of like a cup hangover after a team is to kind of go through and have the thing that maybe, like, I almost feel like maybe we were pretty focused on the cup, and for better or worse, our league play and league form was kind of not an afterthought, but sort of secondary. So I think once we kind of accomplished that goal that we were moving forward, it was almost hard for maybe some of the players to get back in because some of the performances were not spectacular. I mean, the Toronto one was obviously very solid, but Toronto have also been sort of a basket case this year. Not exactly
dumpster fire at the end of the year.
Not exactly what they would want to see. But ultimately, I think that maybe not wrapped up, but I think that we should have been in a better position, not outside the playoffs going onto decision day. At least we were still in a position where we could control our own destiny. But I think that when you look at sort of, I mean, really, when you look at all three of the games that we lost, when you look at the Atlanta game, the New York game, the Inter-Miami game, I mean, the Inter-Miami game, obviously, we played horrifically, but that shouldn't be a performance that we're putting in, particularly towards the back end of the season when we have so much on the line, you know, playoffs and whatnot. So, yeah, it was something that I can't necessarily say that I'm overly surprised with because we've always been kind of shoddy in the league. Though we have been a lot better away, so the two away losses were, I guess, a little bit, not shocking, but surprising to an extent. Obviously, would have liked to have been fighting for a home playoff spot rather than a playoff spot in general, but, I mean, we have been a little stretched this year. We've had a lot of injuries, particularly to our back line. Obviously, there's a lot of room for improvement, I would say, still, even with making the playoffs, even with winning a trophy already this far this season. But I'm still content, I will say, because you just kind of have to get in, I think, in some of these playoff scenarios. And then obviously you give yourself a chance. You know, the MLS is different than a lot of leagues where you manage it, where obviously the league still matters, but the league matters in reference to getting into a position where you can get into the playoffs. And then that is when you kind of have to kick it into high gear. And hopefully we have a better playoff performance than we did last year, but it's good to continue this consistency of, you know, 3 years in a row making the playoffs and trying to establish ourselves as a team who's constantly in and around, you know, the home playoff spots and someone who can maybe threaten to go a little bit deeper. Because I think that we've been a pretty good tournament style team under Pareja, and the MLS playoffs are a little bit different than your standard tournament. Not in terms of like how you get eliminated or whatnot, but I think that the teams who are on form at the end tend to do better, and it's not really the survive and advance teams, I feel like, that do well as well here, I guess, as in the US.
I think you're right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is maybe something that could kind of pose some questions for us, particularly because we did not end the season like, you know, in hot.
Well, yeah, in Open Cup, we were survive and advance.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know how that's going to do for us here. But it'll be interesting to see. Montreal is a tough opponent, so.
Yeah. I think end of season-wise, one of my biggest takeaways is the international break came at probably the worst time. So we had, you know, the win, the big emotional win against Sacramento Republic in the Open Cup final. And then we go to Philly, get smashed a couple days later, home against Atlanta United, another. You know, it's a big rivalry. First home game since the win, home against Atlanta, and we lose that game. It was a win or die situation for Atlanta. They way outplayed us. We were very poor on the day, and just they got the win. And I have to say I was really upset after that match. Like, letting your rival come in and beat you like that was really annoying. But then we turned it around against Toronto again. Toronto was really bad, but we got a good, like, morale uplifting win. And then we had the international break. And so that kind of just killed any momentum we would have gotten from that game. And then you lose in New Jersey against New York. And then, of course, going to Miami a couple days later didn't help either. But the boys pulled it out at the end. So I do think that the international break was a big struggle. Obviously, coming the end of the season, players are going to struggle as well, just in terms of getting up for each and every match. Like, yes, they're professionals, but also they're people. And like, they've had a long season. This was, I think, the earliest start to an MLS season, right? In February this year. And it was a shorter offseason this season, if I remember, because of that early start. And then they went all the way to mid-October, obviously because the World Cup is coming up. So I mean, mentally they've got to be fatigued. Physically they're banged up. I understand kind of the poor performances, maybe the players not giving it their all on every play. It's just kind of frustrating to see, really, as a fan, because every game you want to win, you want to perform, you want to give your all. Like, if you're out there, that's what you're doing every game. But then if you put yourself in the player's shoes, and I struggle with this sometimes, but if you put yourself in the player's shoes, yeah, you would go out there and perform like if you had that quality. But come the end of the year, you would also become tired. And so I think it's important to remember that and call that out. But hey, we managed it somehow, some way. We made the playoffs. It was a lucky scrape into the playoffs, not just with the Columbus game. I can list a lot of lucky wins for us this season. We scraped through and we got the points necessary, but man, was it a roller coaster of a season. So let's talk about that match in particular, the Columbus match. We lined up with an interesting switch at the back, obviously forced into it with the Antonio Carlos suspension and the Janssen surgery now. Moutinho in at center back instead of Kyle Smith, and then Schlegel next to him, of course. It wasn't going to be Williams. And then obviously Juan, the only other available defender out there, and he was going to start this game anyways. So what were your thoughts on Pareja's decision to go Moutinho in the center instead of Kyle Smith, as I think everyone was ready for it to be Smith?
Yeah, I mean, I also think that it's interesting that he didn't elect to go with Thomas Williams, but I think that maybe some of his earlier league performances show that he might need a little bit more refinement, which is understandable. But I guess kind of looking at it, I think that one of the reasons that we struggle a lot when we have when we don't have Janssen and Antonio Carlos in the back, and conversely why we look a lot better when we have both of them as well, is because Janssen and Antonio Carlos are both good at playing out from the back, which I think that maybe that kind of played into this decision to have João Moutinho play centrally. Like, I think that we on this podcast often say that he's akin to more of like a midfielder who's playing in a wide fullback position in terms of his ability to progress the ball and stay on the ball and remain composed and pick his head up and find a pass and with good range as well. Not just, he's not like just a tidy player who's able to make these 10-yard passes consistently. He's able to advance the ball and pick out players on like a nice little ping, so if we were going to be in possession against Columbus, which I didn't have much of an understanding, I guess you could say, of how this game was going to go, because Columbus have been, I think, a little bit inconsistent. I mean, I can't act like I watched every single one of their games, but I think that it makes sense if we were trying to keep on the ball to try to replicate that sort of build out the back ability we have with Antonio Carlos and Janssen by playing Moutinho in the middle, because, I think that we saw a few times, I actually thought that he did fairly well.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that maybe, when he was on the ball, especially, like, I think that he was looking very confident, very calm and composed. And, if we're going to have Schlegel in there, someone who is not, horrible, but can be a little, I don't know if error prone is the right word, but he's not particularly too dynamic as a passer and on the ball and stuff like that. I think it would make sense to have someone like João next to him who, in a pinch, he can kind of dump it off and he's a little bit more assured in his feet than Kyle Smith might be. If that makes sense. So I don't think that it was a terrible decision. I think that probably, I expected, if we were going to have to do something like this, to either go with Thomas Williams, which is always a bit of a risk, or go with Kyle Smith as well. I didn't expect to see João Moutinho, particularly because, like, he's not a horrible defender, but it's not exactly something that is the first thing that you would think of when you think of João Moutinho. You think of more of his ability on the ball and in the attack. But I think his passing ability actually parlayed himself into a nice little cameo here as a center back. And I think that it worked out, fairly well.
I have to agree. I think you hit the nail on the head with the idea there behind the decision. Schlegel and Smith at the back does not screen technical security in the middle. And we could not afford to give the ball away, right? So, again, what, like you said, one of Janssen's biggest traits and one of his biggest adds to the team defensively, he's fine. You know, makes mistakes here and there. Every defender does. But it's really his on the ball presence, and we've struggled without him for this end of the season. And putting Moutinho in the middle there, forced to do it, obviously, forced to put somebody we didn't want to put in there basically is what I'm trying to say. But I think that's the reason in this match. I really do, because Carlos, he can do it on the right. Like it's doable. He's got a good passing range as well. Not as good as Janssen, obviously, but man, oh man, I think you hit the nail on the head there with Moutinho. Speaking of Janssen, I want to hear your thoughts on the decision to do the surgery this late on in the recovery process. Obviously, we don't have all the information, but I think there's some interesting takes or opinions that people can have on this, and I want to hear yours.
Yeah, I mean, I think that maybe this could kind of suggest that he wasn't recovering in the way that they had initially hoped. If they were trying to get him on a path that would see him maybe be able to come back and play consistently in the playoffs, which I don't ever really know if that was, I don't ever really know if that was going to be possible. So I think that if that was going to be kind of a push already to get him back, it makes sense to try and be a little more thorough in his recovery process. And I think, obviously, I'm no doctor, but that's kind of the point of this surgery, in order to make sure that he's able to come back stronger and recover in a way that doesn't see him getting as consistently kind of nicked, I guess, if that makes sense, with these smaller injuries. Obviously, he's a bit of like a brutish defender, where he doesn't shy away from a tackle or anything like that. So like these lower body injuries aren't overly uncommon. So if he already, and what I saw from the timetable, it looked like there was a good chance that he would be back, if not for the start of the season, not too late, start of next season rather. It won't be too far from that point. I mean, obviously he might not be fully fit through training camp and stuff like that, which would kind of put him back a little bit. But I think that it makes sense that if he is not going to be able to be fit for the playoffs right now, you might as well just kind of do whatever you need to ensure that he is ready and fully fit and able to stay consistently healthy, more so than he has been this season. Because it kind of always seems that we're not at full strength, with our in the back line, but particularly with the center backs. So, I mean, it's going to suck not to have him. We're already going to be very stretched thin. Rodrigo, you know, he's capable, but I don't think that Antonio Carlos and Rodrigo Schlegel are, you know, even close to what Janssen and Antonio Carlos can bring when they're fully fit and firing on all forms. I mean, I think that they're still probably one of the better center back pairings in the league, even though I feel like the quality of that position throughout the league is improving. I think that they're still at that high level. So, it's going to leave us very thin. And if we were to sustain an injury in the playoffs, I think that that's going to be an incredible struggle, because I think maybe playing Jean Moutinho at center back in one game could work in a pinch. But if we're going to try to make any sort of run against the quality of teams that we're going to be playing, it's not going to be good. But I think that if Janssen needs this from a medical perspective, I think it's completely understandable and probably the right call.
Yeah, Schlegel and Moutinho versus like the top teams scares me.
Even Montreal would, I don't think that it would fold to or bolt to.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, no, yeah, the reason I ask about Janssen and the surgery is I see people, the discourse is, why didn't we do this sooner? Basically, why didn't we decide to do this surgery sooner? If you can avoid surgery, you do. Like, it's plain and simple. Yeah. You can avoid surgery on a player, you do. And the rehab wasn't working. Like you said, that it was definitely not going the way they thought that it would, the way they predicted. Like, something just wasn't working right. So, you know, time passes. A lot of thought goes into these decisions. A lot of discussions need to be made with a lot of different people. These people are very busy. You know, they can't just, you know, call each other up. There's practices going on. There's daily meetings. Like, yes, they're in the same office, but everyone's busy. And so it might take a week, you know, to have a discussion about something like that. And then the next week there's a follow-up item that you have to talk about. So these things take time is basically what I'm trying to say. And then obviously they're trying to avoid surgery. Who knows? Maybe Janssen did not want to do the surgery until closer to the end of the season. Maybe he wanted to see if he could come back. I mean, heck, he was on the bench for one game and then disappeared off the face of the earth. And I think we have precedent with this, don't we? Didn't Moutinho do a surgery close to the end of last season?
Yeah,
if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know if it was Moutinho, but I do remember that there was somebody who was out injured for a prolonged period, and then it just came out like in this fashion, like, yeah, they're doing a surgery for recovery process, which worked well for him. Like, he had a
very good season in terms of availability. Really,
yeah, what he's missed for injuries and stuff like that, which has been an issue with him, similar to how it is with Janssen, where it's not like he's like tearing his ACL or anything like that. God forbid, it's just these sort of muscular injuries or, you know, whatever, just these sort of niggling injuries that are persisting and making him miss games consistently. So hopefully, I mean, we'll have a similar impact, I guess, on Janssen making this decision to do so, which I think if that's the case, it's even more so the right one.
Yeah, and we are ending so early, right? Like, we're ending in October, and then we have the World Cup. I wouldn't be surprised if we start in mid-March again this year. Like, February is not the normal timetable for the next season.
I think
season
it was, like, February 28th or something. This year, 27th.
This year, It was around that time frame, yep.
Yeah, so.
All right, well, let's actually get into the game 20 minutes into the episode. and we had a struggle of a first half. A struggle. People were ready for the playoffs to not be coming to Orlando. Well, they really probably won't be coming to Orlando. Go RSL, by the way. But
come on.
Come on, RSL. You did it last year. But you know what I meant when I said that, guys. Come on now. What was your thoughts on the first half? What's your take? Why was it such a struggle?
We didn't necessarily look obviously very threatening in the first half, but I don't know how much of that was by design, because Columbus are obviously experiencing this phenomenon where towards the back end of the season, they've been dropping so many points and, you know, conceding so many goals in the second half that maybe we were just trying to push for a 0-0 up until halftime, which obviously didn't happen. And then, you know, try to find the winner in the second half. I don't necessarily know how much of that was an actual strategy, but it certainly didn't feel like we were trying to be too threatening going forward, too adventurous, I guess you could say. I also do think that Columbus were in spells. I mean, I don't necessarily think that it was too open of a game in the first half, obviously. But in spells, I think that they were looking pretty all right. Derek Etienne, obviously the goal scorer, not even just the goal. Like, I think that he was doing, you know, pretty well, looking rather threatening, I guess. And he's actually done pretty good this season whenever I watched Columbus, I feel. And obviously Lucas Zellerion was getting on the ball a lot and trying to play make. Cucho had a bit of like an inconsistent game, but he was always available for service and stuff like that. So I think that maybe Columbus are a bit more of a first half team, if that makes sense. And, you know, we were kind of just trying to push and get ourselves to a point where we can find a late equalizer, because that's something that they've kind of been open to towards the end of the season. I don't know how much of that was by design, though, like I said, but it was definitely... It wasn't a very threatening first half, unless for sure. I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah, I mean, I like your thought that maybe it could have been by design, because, look, this is a big game for both teams. Winning, you're in. And Columbus, it was draw and you're in, basically, because Cincinnati were always going to beat DC United. So, like, this was a game where Columbus kind of dictated the story of the match, and we were the ones who kind of had to go and force it the other way. We were the ones who had to go win the game, and I think the frustration was it felt like we weren't even trying it. And maybe that was the tactic. Maybe it was like, first half, don't lose the game, basically get through the first 45 and don't be 2-3-0 down and the season's over. like get through that first half, keep it close. Unfortunately, we did go in down 1-0, but I think that's a very real possibility. I could definitely see Pareja being that kind of coach to say, big game, get to the first half, don't lose the game. I think that's kind of how we approached the cup final as well. You know, it took, don't forget everyone, it took 70 plus minutes for us to get that first goal. And I remember hearing in the interviews, like, that the idea was don't give up the first goal. Because if you give up the first goal, then, like, it could get really downhill from there. And you're really pushing in a cup final at home. Like, that's not the kind of situation you want to be in. First goals are very important, sort of thing. Obviously, we did give up the first goal. And we had to change some things around and really push for it. But, so I like that take. My kind of personal take on the first half was I do think Columbus were playing, you know, for a draw. They were playing to not lose, basically, and get that draw. And they were doing so. They were doing really well at kind of just like sitting back, taking away our build-up options. So like they were pressing Pereira heavy as a lot of teams do now, since he's kind of our only player in midfield with some technique and creative ability. Obviously pressing Facundo Torres every single game, he's getting pressed, kicked, all that fun stuff. Cara doesn't offer a lot in build-up, and I mean Angulo is a stretcher. He's not a build-up guy. He's kind of a, when you do the build-up, you want the ball to end up at him running in behind or making a run down the left to stretch. So I think we're struggling in that department, and so we weren't really creating, because that's kind of our best way of creating chances, and we don't create a lot of chances. So it was just, I think the frustration comes from us not pushing heavy in a must-win game, and then we go 1-0 down. And the goal was pretty disappointing to concede, really. It was a good finish by Derek Etienne. He has had a good season for them. A little bit inconsistent for him. He's had, you know, spells of goals and assists and then nothing for a while and then kind of patchy run here in the run-in. But, yeah, it was a really disappointing first half, and a lot of people were ready to call it quits on the season. Saw a lot of people saying, yep, that's it. That's Orlando City out of the playoffs. But instead, we got to come back. So first, I just want to hear your thoughts on the first goal, which is Urso's. I have to say, I have never seen Urso turn like that, and then let alone after doing that turn, popping it into the back of the net. Like, what? I swear, Urso could try to do that 25-30 more times on the practice field and he wouldn't pull it off. Like, it was beautiful.
I don't know. I feel like this has definitely been his best season for us. And I don't know if that's particularly a hot take.
Really?
Really? Do you
disagree? Really?
I think at least on the offensive ability and how versatile he's been in terms of like where we played him and how he's kind of stepped up for it.
Yeah, I think he's been an important piece, but like I think he's like in build-up and in transition, like I think he's left a lot to be desired. Really? I think his final product has improved, especially with the assists this year, and obviously his goal scoring's been pretty steady per usual, but like in terms of build-up, in terms of transition, making the right pass, making the quality pass, I've been pretty frustrated with him.
I don't know. I mean, I think that's something that's kind of been an issue with him before. Yeah. And I don't know if it's been as terrible. I think that the way that I've like viewed him has changed, because I don't necessarily see him as like even a box-to-box midfielder as much anymore. Like, I almost kind of look at him as like a goal threat 10, if that makes sense. Like, I think that mm-hmm. that's kind of the role that he's occupying more, because I think like if you look where he was on the goal and where Mauricio was, he's like obviously our highest midfielder up on the field very often, especially now that we're kind of playing this sort of solo like Cesar Araujo in the middle, because you know obviously he's been sublime as well and is able to kind of kind of, I don't know, operate in that position by himself without a double pivot. So I think that is why I think that it really has been his best season, because he's playing in an attacking position and asked to try to be a threat for goals. And I mean, I don't have it in front of me, but I imagine he's one of our top scorers this year. And he's shown a lot more quality, I think, in the box. But yeah, it either way, especially for a man who is as sort of like, I don't know, like you wouldn't think of him as this insanely agile. He, you know, he's technically all right, I think, but the turn was incredible. And then the finish was like striker-esque. It wasn't hit with an incredible amount of power. It was just touched very well into the bottom right corner. It was the composure that we needed. And I think the pass was good by Mauricio to find him. Like, it was advancing kind of into the box, but there was still a lot to do in terms of like ground to cover to get into a shooting position. And yeah, it was really good. It was exceptional. And I think that at least in his attacking presence, it's been something that we've seen relatively consistently thus far this season. I don't know if I'm mistaken in that, but
no, yeah.
It was lovely.
I pulled up the stats here. He finished on 5 goals, 4 assists, which put him at 3rd most goals on the team in the league. And then in terms of assist, the 4th most assists in the league.
And for the team, you mean?
For the team, yeah.
Okay, and I get what you're saying, yeah.
And that's real assists, not MLS. That's real assists.
Okay.
That's pretty good for a midfielder.
I think he's been very good. I think he's almost someone that a lot of people would see him as a DM, maybe. And I mean, he's played as double pivot a lot for us, but the spaces that he's occupying right now, I definitely think he's more of a 10 almost. And he's, I mean, I like you said, I mean, I've already made this point, but he's producing at a pretty high level, I'd say.
Yeah. Man, but that spin, I mean, that's just not something I thought was really in his wheelhouse, basically. Like, that turn, the finish was really good as well. And it came at a really important moment for us, right? 1-0 down, pushing for an equalizer to try and turn this game around. And it's just that individual quality. And look, a lot of our wins this season have come down to individual quality. And that's just another big moment from one of our players. Of course, being Junior Urso, the Bear. So now, game is dragging on, right? coming to the end of the game, 80 plus minutes, and still 1-1. We're still not making the playoffs. We need something to happen, and we get a penalty. So my first question for you is, do you think it was a penalty?
I definitely think it was a penalty. I think Dehenek's hand was in obviously an unnatural position, kind of making himself larger. And I think that, I mean, I didn't necessarily maybe see it as clearly in real time, but if you're going to look at that play and review it, which I think they should have done, like, it very clearly, I think, is an unnatural position or whatever verbiage you want to use for handball. I know that it's a bit of a vague rule from time to time, but you know, it wasn't to his side. It wasn't within his body. It was outstretched a little bit. So I think for sure, I think that I don't know if you disagree, but I thought that it was a stonewall, no ifs, ands, or buts type situation. Definite penalty. Mm-hmm.
With the rules the way they are today, I mean, I'm a stickler for handball penalties personally. It helped us here, so like obviously I'll take it. But with the rules the way they are, like, I think it is a penalty. And plus, we've had some BS handball penalties this season. I mean, obviously the one against Inter Miami for Schlegel, never a penalty. Never a penalty. And honestly, that was pretty early in the second half. Like, we were playing god awful. We probably would have gone on to lose the game, but 2-0 at that point in the game is still a surmountable mountain to climb. Like, you can come back from 2-0 and do something. 3-0, game's over. Like, heads drop, it's over. You're not coming back from 3-0 most of the time. 2-0, that's a different story. So that was pretty important. And then I remember against the Red Bulls at home in the league where we lost 3-0, another like super random BS handball So we basically what I'm trying to say is we deserved this one. we got not to mention the Austin game where two handballs equaled two yellow cards immediately.
Yeah.
Man got sent.
That's like, the one that I thought you were referring to when you're talking about Schlegel. I couldn't remember the first one that you're saying, but that I thought both of those were crazy, quite egregious for the Austin game.
Yeah. The Schlegel one was the third goal in the Miami match, the 4-1 loss.
I'll have to go back and look. Yeah, the Miami game, I was at Halloween Horror Nights, you know, I wasn't.
Oh, okay. So not a real fan. Understood.
Yeah, that is true. I hate to say it.
but yeah, we earned this one through all the other BS calls. And honestly, I don't really think it's a BS call. His unnatural position, it's blocking the shot towards goal, I believe, and just surprised it wasn't called in real time, basically. But I guess not, because I feel like refs just let VAR re-ref the game now. Like, very rarely do you see the penalty called, at least in this league. Were you happy to see Faku be the one stepping up and not a Maurizio Pereira or a, I don't even know who else would have taken it, a Junior Urso? Were you happy that he was the one who took it?
I think that I was extremely happy that it wasn't Maurizio, unfortunately, as much as I appreciate him. He's not a penalty kick taker, much like, you know, Nani was a sublime player for us, but he's not somebody that I wanted to be at the spot. And Facundo, I think particularly in, you know, after maybe the first quarter of the season, once he had some time to settle in, has been our most kind of composed, I want to say sort of clutch player, if you will. And I was happy to see him. I think that I would have been all right if it was Kara. I think that I would have been all right if it was Benji, if I'm being completely honest, even though like that probably never would happen. But yeah, I'm glad that it was Facundo, and I'm glad that, you know, our young DP who has done so much for us this season and, you know, been insanely productive, after not a bad like start to his career here, but like he was a little bit quieter than some people would have hoped for. But once he was given this freedom, to express himself as a player, he's been fantastic. And yeah, I was happy that he had the opportunity to kind of push us into the playoffs, because I think that he's been our player of the season, and it's only right that he was the one to propel us into the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, he has that big game energy about him. Just, it feels like every big game he is there popping up with a moment. Obviously the Open Cup final, had a good game in the semifinal, popping up with goals all over the place throughout the league, assists, and the penalty here as well. I mean, even for Peñarol, he scored, I think, a penalty in the final to win them the game as well. So, like, definitely he's got that big game energy, which we've obviously said before. Again, just quick, Benji comes on, gets us the penalty. I mean, we had that kind of legend conversation, I think, last time, and yet again he's popping up with a big moment. Benji Michel, of course. So I wanted to give him his props as well, earning us the penalty to get the win. Facundo, of course, steps up and puts it away. In terms of Facundo Torres, he could be gone this winter. You know, there is a World Cup coming up. That the transfer window after the World Cup is always insane, you know, with inflated prices for players who have a good World Cup, and with people moving from one team, that means that people need to get replacements in, and they have to look at different leagues and yada, yada, yada. So there's a very real possibility that we could lose him, as awful as that sounds, this winter after only one season. So what would you accept for a price tag for him coming off of this first year in MLS?
Yeah. So it was like $7.5 million, and then like two million add-ons, right? Something around there.
Yeah.
And then, but that, I don't think there was a sell on included in his.
There was like, we got like 80% of his rights or something like that. So that would equate to like a 20% sell-on fee or something. There's something in there like that though.
Okay. Yeah. I guess that would make, you know, typically with these sort of deals, with these young player deals, you would almost want the team that produced them to get some sort of benefit if they are to, you know, move on for a big fee. I think that it does depend. It depends, obviously, like you said, on if he makes the World Cup roster for Uruguay, if he features at all. Like, if he features at all, and he doesn't really even have to be insane, you know, like, he just has to look all right. Like, I think even, like, Uruguay, they had some guy, he had, like, cornrows. His name was, like, Lexel or something like that. And I think after the World Cup, he moved to Milan because he was, like, pretty good as a wingback, and he wasn't ever really a particularly good player. But the point of what I'm saying is just that, like, any player who looks all right in the World Cup, that does inflate their transfer fee by quite a lot. And I think that, obviously, that would only benefit us. As for a fee that I would accept, I think that maybe some people, like, their initial feeling would be like, oh, like $25 million or something like that, which, you know, like, doesn't, yeah, it is, I don't know if that's, like, a ridiculous thought, but it's just probably not realistic, especially after one season. You know, there has been, like, Arsenal interest and stuff like that. So, I mean, I don't know how concrete it was, but I think it kind of shows that he's being tracked, and obviously Arsenal would make sense to an extent because, you know, we played them in the preseason friendly and he did well, or preseason friendly for them. Obviously it was like a midseason friendly for us, but
yeah,
I don't know. I think that maybe anything above, like, maybe something around like $17 million, I think would be good. I don't know how realistic that is, but I actually kind of wouldn't mind if we, I don't want to get fleeced, obviously, but I'm not holding my expectations too high. I think that it is almost equally as important to become a team that is known for developing players and sending them into Europe, because that's going to get more interest for us, like, from European players, get more trust from their agents that this is not kind of like a dead end or destination. But I don't know. I think around $17 million would feel fair. That also has a lot to do with the World Cup and how he does in the playoffs and stuff like that. But obviously we want to make a decent profit for our next DP. But I also think that being known as a talent factory is going to make us much more attractive for younger players from foreign nations. And I think that that is important for, you know, an MLS club as well, because you kind of have this association, for better or worse, that this is a retirement league and you don't want to be at
mercy of that.
So it's going to make it a lot harder for you to bring in the next Facundo Torres, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And it sounds like, well, at least it feels like, based on last window, the last two windows, I guess, is that we are not strapped for cash now. We got some money up there at the top. A big fee coming in always helps, obviously. DK was a big help. Thank you, DK. And Facundo will be next, of course, but maybe it doesn't have to be as big or something like that. You know what I mean? For me, I am thinking like 16, 17 would be an acceptable number for me to let him go. I think we shouldn't like super bargain. If someone's coming in for 14, maybe we go, okay, that's fair. Like we didn't want to do that, but like, are we really going to haggle?
I mean, it depends. Like, $2 or $3 million? I don't know how much we would get for the, like, the sell on. You have to kind of keep that in mind. Well, it would also be determinant as well as like if we are to get any sort of sell on fee.
We could do something like that too. It's an interesting thought to have, basically, on what would be an acceptable thing this off season. Now, to be fair, we could keep him and we could, you know, bring in, you know, a signing or two to go for the Champions League. Like, I don't think we're ready to gear up for a winning Champions League run. We'd have to have an insane winter window to do that. But this club has ambitions. They want to win the top honors, I think. And maybe they can entice him to stay, kind of like what NYCFC did with Tati Castellanos. You know, he should have gone in the winter window. But he ended up staying. He did not go to River Plate. He did not go to Europe. And I think CONCACAF Champions League was a big part of that for him. He wanted to play in that continental competition. And maybe that's something Facundo Torres would want to do. I don't know. I don't know how much of a pull that is. He's played in some big competitions already for Peñarol. And Europe, you know, you can't really pass that up, I guess. It's a pretty big point. a pretty big move for someone like him. Okay, so we get the win. Just quickly want to hear maybe your, like, two-minute thoughts on the season as a whole now that it is over, the regular season. So we're at 34 games. We finished with 14 wins, 14 losses, 6 draws, negative 9 goal difference.
Yeah, I mean, I think that...
Seventh place.
No worry. I think the negative 9 goal difference would seem like an issue, but I think that there were a lot of games that just got away with us, which I don't necessarily know if that makes it better or worse. But I think that we held our own for the most part, other than a few kind of like near blowout, like 3-plus margin goal victories, or goal defeats, rather. But just my thoughts on the season as a whole, I guess. I think that at times it was obviously not very pretty. It wasn't overly inspiring. It was looking like we were kind of struggling to create chances. But as we've often said about Oscar Pareja, like, his whole approach is just to find a way to get results. It's not necessarily to play this insanely dazzling style of soccer. And I think that you have to give him and the entire staff credit, because I mean, there's no doubt that winning a trophy and then still making the playoffs is a successful season. Like, regardless, you know, maybe it wasn't always the most inspiring form of getting these results, and maybe there are some times as well where we were kind of giving up points where we probably shouldn't have, but I don't know. I guess nothing is ever immensely perfect. I think that I'm completely satisfied is not even the word. Like, I know that at times it's a little hard for me to convey my overall emotions, but I just being able to win a trophy and then still kind of compete on two fronts, I think is something that I'm very happy with. And it would be hard for me to complain about anything like that. I think that I still think, you know, obviously I don't think that we should fire Oscar Pareja. That would be immensely unfair right now. But I think that maybe there's a manager out there that can get a little bit more out of us. But either way, I think that we're playing at a solid level, and we're getting results at a rate that we need, and we're competing on all fronts, and we're developing players. I think it was really good. There's obviously a lot more to go into on that point, and I'm sure that we will in a later date. But overall, I think that it was a good season. I'm completely happy with it. Or a good regular season, obviously. There's still more to go.
When I look at the season as a whole, including Open Cup, and taking that into perspective, obviously, you know, added more games to the schedule. We were at home for those games, but you guys know what I mean. Just kind of having those extra games does not help. The regular schedule, we've seen that with CCL. Seattle wins CCL this year and missed the playoffs, like, for the first time in their history. Like, those extra games do have an impact on regular season. So with that in mind, I see this as it's good to come out with the result that we made the playoffs. But as a whole, this regular season was really disappointing for me. I mean, like I said earlier, I think we lucked our way into the playoffs. It was a scrappy season from us, and I think we have a better squad than that. I really do. I do think a different coach could come in and get more out of this group. I don't think Pareja will be fired. If he is, I wouldn't be adverse to that sort of thing, but I'm not calling for his head. Like, I'm very lukewarm on the issue. If he were to leave, I think it's fair based on the way we're playing, based on the money that was invested in the squad, and scraping into seventh, I don't think is good enough. The cup, on the other hand, maybe that is good enough. And I think the decision makers will feel that it is and give him another shot next season, especially with his CV. Or, you know, if you're fired, like, I'd be like, okay, like, we're not playing good soccer. Like, we're going to go into a different direction. I don't think that'll happen, though. No issues for me. Just the season felt very lucky. I mean, we went on that 4-game win streak. And, you know, the Red Bulls, 1-0. We have 2 shots. You know, Charlotte, last second win. New York City FC, last second win. Seattle Sounders, 2-0 to 3-2 comeback, last second win. Like that's lucky. The Miami game, I mean, talk about luck, right? Toronto, last second corner. Like there's just so much that went our way and not a lot that didn't. Like really, there are some referee calls here and there. The Austin match felt kind of like that was unfair. We should have won that match. But most of the time, like, the losses were deserved and the wins felt kind of undeserved a lot of times.
Yeah.
So,
but I think
for
that's...
me, it's a lucky season. And maybe I think I know what you're going to say, like, maybe that just speaks to the team, like, grinding out results no matter which way. But like, that's disappointing to me with the quality in our squad. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I do agree that like there very clearly is a lot of talent in this team. But I think that I've always just been under the impression with Oscar Pereja that, like, and I know that it always sounds so stupid when I say this, but he more than any coach, like, there are some coaches that it is genuinely, like, even if they're not necessarily getting the results, you can point at, like, the style of play and say that it's entertaining, it's whatever, dazzling, whatever words you want to use for it. But I just don't think that Oscar, like, is that type of coach. Like, I think that it's always just going to be not quite a slog. And I mean, this kind of like, this maybe isn't what you want out of your team, which I think is a completely fair assertion. You want them to play up to their standards in terms of entertaining soccer. And I think that we definitely have the squad to be able to do that. But he is just like such a results oriented coach where it's like, it's not always going to be pretty. And a lot of times it might feel like luck and stuff like that, but like, he is just a coach where if he is getting the results, then I'm completely content with him. And I think that throughout his 3 years here, whatever, we can point to a lot of underlying stats and say that, you know, we maybe got the rub of the green and maybe we were a bit lucky to get out with these results, but that is just the type of coach that he is. And I really find it completely unlikely that even with a first round exit in the playoffs, he gets fired. And I don't know how that would reflect on us as a club if, you know, we're a team who got our first trophy of the MLS era and then still made the playoffs and then we fire a coach. Like, I don't know what that would say about job instability. I mean, you definitely can explain to them the style of play that you wanted to do and he wasn't putting that out on the field. But I don't know. It just seems weird and seems highly unlikely that
he's not getting fired. It's not happening.
For sure.
So, and I have to say, Chase, like you said that way early this season. And I remember at the time being like, that is such a good take. Like this very, very, very smart take. And it's you kind of beat me to it because I was going to give you that praise. But you just said it again because the next segment that I wanted to do was on the coach himself. And I posed this question or this thought on Twitter that Pereja's like a good kind of case study almost on how you as a fan, what's the word I'm looking for? Like prioritize performances versus results, right? Because we can all see the performances are like very hard to watch most of the time. There's some good ones. You know, I'm not saying that we're just awful the whole entire year. There's been some good performances. Columbus away was good. I thought Austin away was good before the red cards. I think obviously Toronto at home was a good performance. There's more. I thought DC United away, even though we lost that match, was a really good performance from us. There's bits and bobs here and there. Open Cup semifinal, obviously. But most of the time, it's hard to watch. But on the other end, we have a cup that he got us to. And you can say that's lucky, but at the end of the day, it's results. And then he gets in the playoffs three seasons in a row. So where do you feel you land on that spectrum? Do you land more on the results side of it where, hey, no matter what, you get us to where we need to be and then the rest will kind of figure itself out? Or are you performances and like this is hard to watch and like the decisions I think are kind of stupid? I think I know where you lean, but would love to hear your take on that.
I actually think for the most part, you know, I always say that soccer, like sports in general, or entertainment. So I want to be entertained. So I would say that for the most part, I mean, it is like a bit of a cop out answer, but obviously there's an element of both to it. Like if we are playing this like dazzling style, but we are not, you know, getting any results and we're on the outside looking in the playoffs, then that's not good enough. I think for us specifically though, as much as I do like to be entertained and want to see an entertaining style of soccer, because we were so like poor for so many years and we're not able to, you know, get results or challenge for trophies or anything like that, I kind of just did not care. Like I just, or, well, you know, I want them to play well. I want them to play entertaining. I want the games to be open, but I was more so just had this overriding desire to see us succeed no matter how that came to be. So I think that for now, for this season, this sort of era, I guess, for Orlando City, I was honestly really only worried about the results. And I wanted us to, like, I would still, like, look at the underlying stats and stuff like that. And obviously, there's a lot of value there. But none of that really matters if we are, you know, not winning consistently, or vice versa, if we are winning consistently. So I think for now, I was really just focused on trying to get us to win a cup. But now that I think that we have some silverware, I want us to see us, I want to see a transition to a more entertaining style of play. And that does not mean like one thing. Like there are plenty of ways to play entertaining soccer.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that what we are doing is entertaining. And I think that we have the talent for it. I think that we have some very good players who, if played well, if we make some more astute tactical decisions with them and give maybe some players a little bit more freedom, we can play that sort of style of soccer that we would like. And I think that this team could look a little bit different, particularly in sort of our creative pieces at the beginning of next year. But you look at like, who's like a good example? I mean, I know that this is like not really attainable for us because they are like, you know, supporter shield contenders every year. But you look at the way like an LAFC plays, they are always entertaining no matter what. Even if they are not performing to the level that they would hope for, because, you know, some years they're never a bad team, but some years they're not necessarily one of the best teams in the league, which I think is the standard that they've set for themselves. Like, that is something that you can never kind of say. They're always entertaining. They're always like open. There are chances to be had for both teams, really. And that obviously is why I think LAFC is one of the most enjoyable teams to watch from a neutral standpoint in the MLS often.
Mm-hmm.
So I think now it's sort of shifted to that sort of middle ground that I like to sit where maybe I still think that maybe I'm a little bit more entertainment. I want to be entertained. I don't want it to be a slog because it would get old for me after a few years, even if we were consistently playing well. I've shifted from this sort of results only, just not wanting to see us suck and get pounded every week and all that. I think the Open Cup has made me a little more open to someone who is not as results oriented and someone who has a style of play that is entertaining, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I think that's a really fair assessment on the situation. And I think I could even, you know, take the question a step further back, right? So I said performances versus results, and you're talking about you want to be entertained. That's a fair statement. So maybe it's you know, performances versus results, entertainment versus competitiveness, right? So maybe that's kind of the high-level word for the results side of things. Like, yes, you say at the end of the day it is an entertainment industry, right? But it's also competitive. People want to win, right? So like,
yeah,
if you're winning, you know, if you're getting those results, like you're going to be okay with the coach.
There's some people who say that just winning is entertaining regardless of how you obtain it. And I can't really say that they're wrong for that. I think that like the team that you support in England is actually maybe like a good example of this. Like, where do you sit? Because obviously consistently, like under Wenger, they were qualifying for Champions Leagues and stuff like that. And it was consistent. And I wouldn't say that they were boring to watch in that era. Obviously you would have a better assessment of that than me, but I think that now, and even like the past few years when maybe they weren't playing well, I always found Arsenal to be maybe a little bit more fun now. I don't know if that's wrong. I mean, definitely they are now, but they are also maybe the second best team in the Premier League. but I guess that's just kind of a
No, recently we have become a lot more fun to watch. I'd say since the cutoff, I think a lot of Arsenal fans would say, is when we beat Chelsea 3-1 Boxing Day 2020, I think. Since then, we've kind of had a long, slow improvement that has kind of led to the point that Arsenal are at now. But yeah, that one was kind of performances over results, because we would have good performances and maybe not get the result, sort of thing. And maybe that does kind of inform the listeners here of how I feel about Orlando City. I do want to see us play well. The games are sometimes so hard to watch. And I think come the end of the season, I mean, I was super thrown off rhythm after my big trip out west. But come the end of the season, it was like same performance, different game. What are we going to talk about? The same issues are there. We're not seeing a lot of progress in anything. And, you know, I do find myself talking high level a lot, because each game is the same. Really, like, yeah, there's differences, and we could get into the nitty gritty of each game and say, oh, well, in this game he deployed Urso as the 10, in this game we went more 4-3-3, but like, there's only like two or three different formations, or really two formations that he uses. He deploys people in similar positions, and they have the same output each time. Like, there's just not a lot of progress being made right now within the squad, and that's fine because we're getting the results. It's hard to talk about, and so I feel bad because we're not putting out episodes, but I just feel like come the end of the year, there was not much to touch on. I feel like we have already hit on everything.
Even though, like, he obviously, we have like won this silver, like, it still kind of does feel like this is maybe like the ceiling for Oscar Pereira. Like, I don't necessarily know if he's the guy that can get us, and I could be wrong. I mean, I'm thinking that he'll get some more financial backing in the summer, and that could completely revolutionize us, but I don't really know if he is the type of guy who can bring us to an MLS Cup. You know, that honestly, he's obviously one of the better MLS coaches of all time, I would say. But that's kind of always been the thing about him. He struggles to get a team to that level, even if he's able to get them playing well in the regular season. Like, you know, it's hard. He struggles to get that team over the line, I guess.
Yeah. And you know, this was his first season with money. He got a little unlucky with the Gonzalez injury. When I say money, I mean like financial backing. Like if he is backed again financially next season, I'm going to be very hard on him. Like, and I think the club will be too. Like, if they're going to back him financially and say, we believe in you, we think you're a very good coach, last season, just circumstances, whatever, like, we're going to back you. We're going to go for more silverware this season. We, you know, MLS Cup, whatever. And he has a similar season where we're fighting for fifth, sixth, and seventh. Like, I'm going to be really hard on that. Now, that's, you know, that's a lot of ifs, and obviously just a scenario based statement. But I hope this is not his ceiling as a coach, especially if he gets financial backing.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I'd love to hear kind of people's thoughts on that in terms of performances versus results. There are some good replies to that tweet if you guys want to go search it up on Lions Blog 1. There's some interesting discussions that were had in the replies, per usual on Twitter. All right, so speaking of Twitter, let's go ahead and get into some of our fan questions. We don't have a lot, but the first one here, I think, is a pretty good one by two different people who had a similar question. So at Mr. Danger Russ says, ownership says Pareja gets one big money splash player. What's a realistic signing you'd want to see? And then at Adrian underscore Viveros says, realistic dream signings for next season. So I don't have names for you, and I assume you don't either, but I do kind of have an idea of the position, the dream position, and the traits of that position that I want to see us sign. So Chase, I'm going to start with you. Do you have an idea around that question in terms of a big money splashy player, the position, and kind of some of the big traits you want to see brought in?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's just kind of fair to say that it could be, you can kind of go to any of the South American leagues and then see, you know, who are the young players that are filling your profile and then just kind of go in for them. Because I think even as a club, that is something that kind of fits our style right now. I think the type of player that I would like to see us get, I think maybe Mauricio might be gone after this year. If not, you know, I think he wasn't bad this year, but I think that maybe he shouldn't be a DP or somebody earning too much money. I think that it would, well, you know, if we bring him back, I don't think he's going to take a severe pay cut, but I think that they're going to ask him to take a pay cut, whatever that might be. And in terms of the profile of the player that I would want to see us get, I think it would be someone who is kind of in this, like, and obviously it's going to be hard to find someone in this exact mold or at this quality because he's one of the better players in the league. But I would want to see us get someone who's sort of in like the Zella Rayan or like a Lucho Acosta even type mold, where they're a bit of a quicker playmaking 10 who is able to get on the ball and pick out a pass as well as kind of run at defenses. Like, I think that that is maybe like my favorite profile of player in the league. And that's kind of the type of player that if we are going to look for a DP to splash, I would really like to see us get a player like that, because I think that we often spend money on like wingers and stuff like that. And I think that maybe we try to get a player in this mold with like Josue Coleman, but it kind of hasn't worked out. And I would like to see us get, I'm trying to think of like parallels in the league other than the two that I mentioned, but I mean, even maybe, I don't know. Yeah. Just someone sort of in that mold, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I like that. I'm also targeting that position. I think Pereira could leave. And if not, maybe he comes back on a TAM and you say, hey, we'll give you a slight pay cut to be at least a TAM level. And then that's going to allow us to go get a DP. And then you don't have to play every single game. You know, you are aging. Like, you can take a break now and again. You don't have to be the most important player on the pitch, basically. You can still be our captain, that sort of thing. Hope your kids like Florida. Please stay. But I am targeting that CAM. And I want a sort of second strikery player like a Taxi Fontas for Urchinkara. We've already invested the money. I don't think we're going out and getting another striker for a DP. He's our DP striker. So let's surround him with what he needs. He needs someone who makes runs off of him. He needs someone who's close in proximity to him. We don't need a winger who's going to be out on the wing and is going to be putting crosses into him. That's not what he needs. He's got good off-ball movement, good runs. He can play combination play a little bit. We've seen that a couple times this season. But you stick someone close to him in proximity, quick, shifty, good in tight areas, and can score, you know, I think that could unlock Urchinkara as a player. I don't particularly like players who you have to have another good player to unlock them. I don't think that's the right way to go. I just want my players to be good in general. And I don't think Urchinkara is bad at all. But if you're reliant on other people to give you that space, especially at striker, I don't think that's the way to go. So for me, I kind of want our very own Taxi Fontas within the CAM position. Maybe someone like a Gazdag who makes those kinds of runs into the box. I think that would be a good parallel within the league. You know, Gazdag's not really the most creative player, but does make good runs, does get close to his strikers, can create good and tight spaces for me. So kind of like a Gazdag would be my parallel there. So good questions there. The next one is, there's a couple of like whatever ones. Will OC always have a Peruvian player on the team by at that in can dude?
That in can dude. I think that we've had some success with the Peruvian, so I would love to see it continue.
Yeah. Why not, right? We've had some good Peruvian players. And then Jimmy _SLC. Am I on crack? I feel like after that roller coaster of a season, this might be what a crackhead feels like. I don't even know exactly how to qualify or quantify this season. So am I on that crack rock?
Wow.
First time I've read that. yeah, this was a pretty crazy season. Very up and down. So maybe you are on that rock. But maybe we're on that rock with you, Jimmy.
Something I can.
Okay, so the last one is from @Marima_4. Have you watched Montreal at all this season, Chase? Have you seen any of them?
Yeah, a little bit. As much as, like, I will say that this is, you know, in the end of my bachelor's degree, I didn't watch as much as the MLS around the league as you haven't. But I see the question that we're talking about.
So Marima asks, I just want to know all things Montreal, expectations, and what we need to do to get the win. You'll probably talk about this anyways.
Yeah, I think the Montreal game, we're obviously not going to be favored, and that's not just because they're the 2 seed and we're the 7 seed. They're a really very talented team in all phases of play. I think Kamal has turned out to be a really good MLS center back. Georgi Mihailovic is, maybe one of the better players in the league now, and so is Romel Kyoto. He's had a pretty good season, and they still have, like, Mason Toy and Torres as well, so they have a lot of really quality attackers. Alistair Johnson has turned out to be a really good signing. UC Lapalainen, I think, is always someone who's been a little bit underrated. He's done pretty well this season as well. They're a very good team, and they're a very threatening team, and they're sound defensively. It's going to be tough. It's going to be especially tough now that we do not have our full strength center backs. That's kind of a guarantee going into it. I think that maybe this is going to be another one of these games where we're going to sit and defend a little bit and then hope to find a goal, whether that be through an outlet. Or I still think that sometimes we still get, like, a solid spell of possession and even, you know, the most lopsided of games. So, all things Montreal. I know you're the MLS Now guy, so you might have a little bit more than me, but they're a very, very good team. And I'm not just saying that because they're the second seed. Like, they play a good style of soccer, and they have a really good depth when it comes to their attackers, and they're very sound defensively. What's the name of their goalkeeper too? I can't remember his name.
They have or something like that. Reza, and they have Pantemis.
Yeah, Pantemis. Whenever I've watched them, which, you know, has been 4 or 5 games, I thought he's pretty solid as well. Like, basically, I think that they're pretty good everywhere. So I don't know. I'm not saying that I'm completely defeatist about it, but it is going to be an incredibly hard challenge, especially, like, in that Montreal cold. They've got a lot of dynamic players that are going to cause us a lot of problems, unfortunately.
Yeah, so I could walk through their whole roster if you wanted me to, but basically, if I were a head coach and I knew what I was doing, this is probably the system I would play. I have watched a decent bit of Montreal this season, and they play a 3-5-2. And the reason I really like that system is because you can do multiple different types of play styles in one system and move pieces back and forth and not really be affected or be stretched, sort of thing. So if you think about it, in attack, they have the 2 strikers. So you can get your wing backs up and then put crosses in if you want to do that. Or you have 3 in the midfield, so you can drop a striker in a little bit, go through the middle. So then you basically have a 4-man midfield almost, and then you have that second striker up there to be a nuisance. So you could go through the middle. If you're really pushing high and you want to press teams back, when they clear the ball, a lot of times teams play with 1 central striker. So it's going to be a 3v1 at the back. So they can press high like that unless they have a dangerous player who can run in behind and stretch. Like Urchin Kara, they're gonna feast on him. I would start Benji in this match, sort of thing. Make them step back. Make them respect you. Make them turn their heads, basically. Because in this system, with Urchin Kara up there, he would struggle against a 3-man backline. He just would. And he has this season in multiple games. So when we're clearing the ball and it lands, you know, 5-6 yards to the right of him and he has to run over and get it, when he does that, it's 1v3. So he has to hold it up and like he just doesn't do that a lot for us. So the system is very, you can do multiple things with it is basically what I'm trying to say. And when it comes to the playoffs, we got hurt by that last season. Maybe not this exact system, but we got hurt by multiple things being able to be done to us. So Nashville, Nashville, we scored early and then they came back, got that deflected goal. And then, they dominated the rest of that first half. Nashville did. And then the second half, we dominated. They sat deep and then they countered. So they were able to do multiple different play styles within one game and still be successful with it. And I think Montreal system is able to do that. And then they just have really, really good players. A lot of them have technique. They all work hard defensively. They all have good positioning. I mean, this team is a super team in terms of starting lineup and depth. Mihailovic is obviously the big name. Ismail Kone in midfield, he's getting Europe looks. Wanyama in midfield alongside Piet, who's always given us problems. They went and got Alistair Johnston from Nashville. Very good right back, one of the best in the league. Joel Waterman is someone you can get at, but he's usually flanked by two good center backs. Kamal Miller, Camacho, who left and then came back. And then, so that's kind of like starting lineup stuff, right? And then they've got Lapalainen and Schwanier, who kind of do 50-50 on the left wing backs. And both of them very technical, like to get in behind on that left side and cause teams problems. They've got Joaquin Torres, very creative midfielder, lots of technique. And then they, even some of the other guys like Matt Komiljevic, Mason Toye, Sanusi Ibrahim, Zachary Brolkiard. This is a very, very deep team. So we're going to be playing their starting lineup, and then they're going to make five subs, and they're going to have five high-quality players who could be starters for us basically coming in. Maybe not Miljevic, but yeah, you guys get the point. We have a tough test ahead of us, Marima, and everyone listening. We have a tough test ahead of us. And for me, Benji starts up top all day, all night. It just has to happen. Benji starts up top because that's the only way we're going to stretch him. That's the only way we're going to make them respect us. Other things that I would do to try and win this game is really pack the midfield. Like if they're going to beat us, I would want them to force Alistair Johnston and either Lapalainen or Schwanier to put crosses in from the byline. Like that's the way I want them to beat us. We'll have Carlos back, Schlegel back there, who's decent deep in his box. That's what I would want. So pack the middle, make it hard for them to play through us, force them out wide, make their wing backs put in crosses that we can clear away and sweep up. And then it's going to be Benji pressing, and then we're going to have to score some build-up goals and get lucky on a corner sort of thing. That's really the way I see us winning this match. It is doable. I'm not saying it's not, but yeah, they're a really good team. They're second place for a reason this season. So expectations, I think we lose this game personally.
Boo.
Yeah, I know. Like, that's my expectation. I think they're just too good. Anything to add on that before, or what is your expectation?
My expectation, of course, we are going to win this game. No doubt. Fair enough. No doubt about it.
Love that. All right. Well, Chase, we went a little long per usual. Sorry to do that to you. Where can our listeners find you at?
You can find me on Twitter at VamosOCSC.
Yes, sir. Thank you for chatting with me. Have a good rest of your night. And as always, Vamos Orlando.
Spins right, comes back left, Nani shoots. Oh my goodness, Luis Nani!
DK at Wormhorn. DK shoots, scores! DK wins it for Orlando! The biggest man in MLS comes up huge!